Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the ImpediMed Q4 FY 2019 Investor Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Richard Carreon, Managing Director and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Lexi. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today. We're hosting this conference call to discuss our 4C for the fourth fiscal year quarter ending 30 June 2019. Our CFO, Morten Viglund, is with me on the line as well. During today's call, I'll be referencing the 4C we lodged this morning, Australian time, as well as the investor slide presentation lodged the 19th of June. As you know, we were just in the market last month, so our comments will focus on just the key issues. As we normally do, we'll take questions following my comments. The financial results for the quarter ending 30 June were as follows. Total revenue for the quarter was up 40% to $1.4 million, up from $1.0 million last quarter. This growth was driven by a significant increase in SOZO revenue. Our recognized revenue for SOZO contracts for the quarter was $1.0 million, up 67% from $0.6 million last quarter, and an increase from the same period last year of 150%. Our contracted revenue pipeline increased to $8.7 million, up 13% from the previous quarter. Compared to the end of last fiscal year, 30 June 2018, our contracted revenue pipeline is up almost 150%. The gross margins for this future contracted revenue is +90%. Our total contract value for the quarter came in at $2.0 million, up from $1.3 million the previous quarter, and an increase from the same period last year of $0.1 million. As noticed in previous investor calls, we continue to see seasonality in our business, but we typically have stronger quarters at the end of the calendar and fiscal years. Now, we believe the main drivers of this is the budget cycle at our customer level. Until we see widespread reimbursement, we believe this seasonality may continue. Now, to date, we've signed contracts for more than 400 SOZO devices globally. Our annual recurring revenue for SOZO contracts increased to $3.4 million. This is up 21% from the previous quarter and an increase from the same period last year of $2.1 million, or 162%. Net operating cash outflow for the quarter was $5.4 million, up from $4.8 million in Q3, but down $0.3 million from the same period last year. The increase in cash outflow was primarily related to an increase in inventory purchase of $0.2 million and an increase in R&D spend of $0.5 million. The increase in R&D spend was related to the timing of payments for our clinical trials. Cash receipts from customers for the quarter were $1.2 million, and cash on hand as of 30 June 2019 was $11.3 million. Cash balance on a pro forma basis was $24.3 million, including the net proceeds from the entitlement offer that closed on 19 July 2019. Adoption of our technology remains very strong. Churn since our launch of SOZO has been less than 0.5%, and total patient tests conducted since we've launched SOZO has now surpassed more than 50,000, with almost 14,000 tests conducted alone in Q4. Now, let me provide you an update to the four reimbursement initiatives as outlined on slide 25 of our investor presentation. First of all, the NCCN guidelines. As you're aware, the NCCN guidelines are the Bible of cancer care in the United States. We have worked hard over the last 6 years to have them recognize lymphedema as a major consequence of cancer treatment. Earlier this month, Vanderbilt, the American Society of Breast Surgeons Foundation, and the Learn Patient Advocacy Group submitted an application to the NCCN for inclusion of bioimpedance spectroscopy for the detection of subclinical lymphedema. Obviously, this is an important milestone for us, and we'll keep the market advised when we hear more information about the NCCN decision on the application. Number two initiative was a technical assessment. As background, in 2010, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, also known as AHRQ, now this is an agency under the United States Department of Health and Human Resources, published a technical review of bioimpedance technology in general. This review was based on studies available at the time, and the review was not favorable. When the interim analysis of the PREVENT study was published, we requested a technical assessment of our bioimpedance spectroscopy technology and ours alone. Based on meetings with AHRQ, the application has been accepted for consideration for a full review. This is the first critical phase of several that are required for a fully publicly disclosed technical review of our new evolving technology, and we see this as a very positive step forward. And again, we'll keep the market advised as we move forward with this technical assessment. Commercial payers. We continue to meet with and submit our request for payments of our CPT Category 1 code to commercial payers. At this time, we have not been made aware of any decisions by a commercial payer. These are early days, and this is not unexpected. The meetings we have gone very well, with several of them asking for additional information. One major payer has scheduled a full clinical review of our data for August. Obviously, reimbursement is our number one focus, and we will continue to contact payers and keep the market updated as to our progress. The fourth critical reimbursement initiative was our publication plan, and we outlined three areas of focus. First one was the two-year PREVENT trial data. The principal investigators are currently reviewing the two-year data of this original 508 patients. As you know, the lead investigator has committed to a publication by the end of the calendar year, and we have confirmed that they are on track still to do so. Second of all, we set an independent evaluation of the cost of treating lymphedema. I was informed by the lead author this evaluation has been submitted and accepted for publication, and we expect that to be published later this year. Third, we said there was additional independent studies. I have been made aware that several studies have been completed and are expected to be published yet later this year. Let me provide you a quick update on heart failure. We continue to enroll patients in our heart failure study with a number of sites now recruiting and enrolling patients. There are meetings scheduled with the principal investigators as well as our advisory board at a major heart failure congress later this quarter. So we'll be given a full update on the heart failure program on our next quarterly conference call. In our June investor presentation, we provided guidance to the market for the first time. So please see page 7 of our investor presentation for the details. Now, our confidence in providing guidance is based on the new SaaS model we introduced when we launched SOZO. As you are aware, a subscription business model provides great insight into forward-looking revenue streams, and we are now beginning to clearly see those. We have stated on a number of occasions the critical juncture of a new SaaS business was the point where the subscription revenue exceeds 50% of revenue. We just crossed that critical point. The continued acceleration of our growth is now dependent on two key factors: the continuation and expansion of our current subscription-based business and the acquisition of new customers. We outlined the key initiatives to drive these two factors in our investor deck on page 7. And during the coming quarters, we will provide updates to these 10 initiatives. Now, let me say, we are extremely pleased with how we closed Q4 of FY19, and it sets us up very well for fiscal year 20. We are excited about the future of our business model as well as our SOZO digital health platform. And from a personal perspective, we would like to thank our investors. We just completed a very successful capital raise, which would not have happened without your support. So again, thank you. Lexi, would you please open up the lines for questions?
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Shane Storey with Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. Hi. Look, I've got three questions. The first was just looking at the 40% increase in SOZO revenue this quarter. Can you comment, were any new centres added during the quarter? And there I'm sort of specifically interested in the Ascension Health Hospital Network. Thanks.
We have added new customers. We added more than 50 new devices this quarter, Shane, and I would tell you that Ascension, we didn't add any new devices at Ascension, but I can tell you we are in discussions with Ascension, and they are expanding their educational program, and they want to do educational seminars to other Ascension groups. So we see that as a positive step forward. They're very familiar with our technology, and the lead center has committed to these educational seminars within the Ascension system.
Yeah, okay. So, and I guess as we sort of segue in FY20, look at that revenue guidance that you provided a couple of weeks ago now. Just, if you, I mean, that information that you provided back in June or July, whenever it was, talk to some of the sort of factors that need to go right to get to the top end of that guidance. I was just wondering if you could just refresh our memory on some of those levers that are available to get the revenue towards the top end, and you know what sort of needs to go right and by when to sort of get us up near that sort of $10 million mark.
Certainly. So here's how we explain it. If you look at slide 7, if you don't have it in front of you, I'll quickly go through the key things. The growth drivers we said that are going to be important to get us to the mid-range, and then I'll talk about the ones that get us to the high end. So to get us to the mid-range is to drive our lymphedema national program on prevention, which we're starting to get traction on. That's a new program we outlined when we were in the market, and we're very excited about people now talking about the prevention versus just the detection of that device, and we plan for a full rollout later this quarter nationally. We need to target existing customers who are expanding their patient testing, because as we've learned, if they expand their testing, they buy more devices and they buy more subscriptions. And so that's going to be critically important for us. Expand indications. What we're finding in some of these large cancer centers, as they get used to using SOZO and they get used to testing patients, we have an opportunity to sell them additional indications, which just bumps up our monthly subscription costs. The educational seminars are proving very valuable for us on expanding the usage of our device, so that's another one. We need to significantly reduce our sale to billing cycle time. We've started to see the effects of that with our new software. As we talked about last quarter, our 3.0 software was specifically designed to reduce that installation time. We need to continually provide new economic data that shows the benefits of not only eliminating or reducing lymphedema, but also the cost savings to the system. And that's proving very beneficial as we go and start talking about the economic drivers as well as the patient outcome drivers. And then we should start to see initial private payers begin testing later in the year, and we put that in the back half of the year. That gets us to the mid-range. To get us to high end of that would be expand existing customers into other cancers, such as gynecological, melanoma, prostate cancers, and so forth, at existing customers, because this is low acquisition costs to us and high returns for us, and then get this incorporated into the NCCN guidelines, and then to see an increased number of private payers. So one way to take a look at it is that if you take a look at the low end, that's about 200 devices, the mid-range is 300 devices, and the high range would be for about 300 devices in the marketplace.
Okay, thanks. Look, my last question just relates, I've just had a look now at the total operating expenses for FY19. Should we expect operating expenses to track in a similar way for FY20, sort of noting that FY19 had come down quite a bit from FY18?
Yeah, I think when you look at the FY19 versus 18, the change in operating expenses there is about $3.5 million, Shane.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't see that steep of a decrease in fiscal year 20. I wouldn't say we're going to reduce operating expenses by another 3.5, but it will probably flat slightly down.
Okay. Yeah. Look, that's all I had. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Matty Smith with Canaccord. Please go ahead.
I reckon, Morton. Great to see some nice traction in the commercial adoption. Like Shane, just to imitate him, I've got three questions as well. First one is just around how SOZO's being used. Do you have any visibility in terms of what people are actually testing? Is it still primarily breast cancer, or Are there centres who are starting to use it for some of the other applications, such as protein insufficiency and some of the other things that we've heard about in the past?
I will tell you there's a couple things we're seeing because, again, we're seeing the data live. And so the latest analysis would show a couple things. One, we're seeing more people starting to test for bilateral lymphedema. As you know, until we had SOZO, you could only test for unilateral. Two, we're seeing a greater interest now in the body composition information they're looking for, such as nutrition, such as they're now looking into dehydration for a different subset of cancer patients, head and neck cancer patients, for instance, who have a high rate of readmissions into hospitals because of their treatments. They have trouble swallowing and eating, and so they're in the emergency room an average of 2 to 3 times during their course of treatment. So they're able to detect that early. They can try to intervene intravenously while they're still in a clinic versus going into the emergency room. So we're starting to see a number of tests being conducted that are not lymphedema specific that for us are providing great insights. But people are now starting to realize the software is much more robust than the old U400, and so we're now getting requests for additional training or additional insights into what we can provide. Because we don't have a lot of, I can't give you specifics by account because we've just started that analysis, Maddie, but certainly that's something we'll be bringing up in the future because it is one of our growth drivers is to expand the number of indications that we charge for.
Yep, and just along that theme, you know, you got the approval for bilateral assessment last year. Are the majority of people using it or adopting that functionality, and are they paying more for it, or is it still very, very much focused on unilateral assessment in breast cancer?
I would say currently the majority is for unilateral and breast cancer. However, the more established programs who are starting to test hundreds, if not thousands of patients, a year are now moving beyond unilateral to bilateral because it is an issue that they have to deal with. And so, and we are charging for bilateral in most cases. I would say there's a few exceptions of large centers who wanted to evaluate it, so we've allowed them to evaluate it, but our intent is to get everyone to start paying for an expansion of our indications. And bilateral is a major initiative for us.
So it is proving up the model that you can introduce the technology and then add functionality and start charging more for that additional functionality.
Yes.
Yeah. Second question is just around the technical assessment from the AHRQ. What were the sort of technical concerns that resulted in it not having a favorable review, and I guess to what extent are you comfortable that the data that you are able to submit now will address those concerns?
Well, first of all, understand is that the original technical assessment was based on general bioimpedance, so anything from a single frequency up to our device, and they didn't specifically address every single manufacturer. They just did bioimpedance in general. So, and also, it only looked at data that was available up to 2009 because they published the results in 2010. So they considered bioimpedance at the time experimental and not clearly able to detect changes in lymphedema. So, if you look at the data prior to 2009, nobody had a lot of data. Though we had probably some good data, we didn't have a lot of data. So if you think about the future now, we fast forward 2019, and we're able to have a discussion with AHRQ, talk to them about the PREVENT trial. They were favorably impressed by a small company wanting to do or conducting a large global trial, order of magnitude of which we did, plus all the other independent studies. And we requested not a review of bioimpedance devices, but bioimpedance spectroscopy and only our device, which they were very favorable towards, based on the fact that we now had multiple FDA clearances and based on the fact that we had multiple studies from around the globe. So I would say that we have a very good chance at, one, completing the entire process, and two, having a favorable publication.
And from recollection, that technical review then is a document that could be used by, you know, some of private payers for making their own coverage decisions?
Yes, very good point. I can tell you now there are a number of private payers who have used that technical assessment as a reason for not paying. And one of the things they bring out is the fact that one is experimental, or two, that there's no randomized trial. So, the interesting thing is as we've gone around to several private payers and made our presentations, we always make it a point to say that if, in fact, they had the AHRQ evaluation as part of their denial, that, one, the data was old, it was from 2009, and then we lay out the more than 140 studies on lymphedema that have been conducted since that time. So I think we put that to rest where we have a chance to present that data. And for us, it gives us a chance to, well, that's a good starting point for us in these major meetings, because as you know, or you may be aware of, the fact that when you go into these meetings, they take a look at their own policy and why they made a decision, either positive or negative, and that's their basis for starting. So if we go in knowing that, we can start with, one, the knowledge base, two, the number of studies, and three, the reason we believe that we have now moved out of that experimental range.
Excellent. And just finally, last year you signed up a contract with an insurer who was going to be using SOZO just for their own assessment of their heart failure patients. Has there been any sort of update in terms of, you know, them using SOZO, how effective it's been, any read-through as to their ability to manage or better manage heart failure patients as a result of using SOZO from that project?
You know, to be honest with you, Maddie, I have not stayed up with that particular one. With everything else we have going on, it's a question. I'll be prepared to answer that next quarter. How's that?
That sounds great. Okay. Thanks very much, Guy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Ian Hyde, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Just following on from some of the other questions that have been asked, so if we're getting into expanding indications with existing users plus linking that in with other indications that you're working on with the FDA, looking at bone density, renal failure and so on, linking that into the new software and the machine learning that I understand that's being used, can you put some more colour into just how much this is going to assist and drive and what it's actually providing at the moment to actually really get traction in all of these areas?
Yeah, so let me clarify a couple points here, Ian. First of all, our focus is twofold. It continues to be on the cancer space with lymphedema, and it continues to be on the heart failure clinical trials. So the software today provides information on basic body composition, which gives them information on muscle, on fat, on bone. It gives them the basics. Now, if they want additional information, we need to get FDA clearances for that. So as part of the presentation, we went into the various indications that we have filed for based on the data that we already have from our own SOZO database and some other small trials that were already done independent of us. So the accounts who are using this for head and neck cancer, as I mentioned earlier, are using the dehydration status that we have on there, where you can measure the total body water of a patient. And they take a baseline, much like on lymphedema, and then they follow that baseline. So if they're losing fluid or they're gaining fluid, they can keep track of that, and they know exactly what it's doing. It's not a major emphasis or focus for us, and it's only some very large centers who have high degree of research interest. Right now, our focus of the field is to move into lymphedema cancer centers, develop a lymphedema business, move on to the expansion into bilateral lymphedema, but we're not having a major push by the sales organization for these other indications at this time. We need to establish lymphedema first. When these large centers call us, we're certainly happy to provide information. We like the fact that they're looking for new ways to use them, but once we get lymphedema well established over this year, then it'll be a major emphasis probably next fiscal year or late this fiscal year.
Sure. Okay. Well, just further to that, in the presentation the other week, you're collating real-world data to lodge applications, the FDA for bone density, renal failure, malnutrition, and so on. Update on that?
Yeah, so the good news about our device is the frequencies that we use, 256 frequencies, we do that sweep on every patient, so we can run any algorithm we want against that patient population. So for instance, of the 50,000 tests plus that we have today, we can take a look at patients who are at risk of dehydration or malnutrition. We can't provide that as an indication for use to customers today because they're not FDA cleared, but we can certainly use that data, real-world data, in our applications, and we have used real-world data in our applications to the FDA, one in our initial applications and in our follow-up discussions with them. So it has proved to be very valuable for us as we've moved forward. So, again, it's the beauty about our technology, those frequencies are never going to change. And so any indication we want, we can retroactively, historically look at these patients and pull their information. One, we know they're a sick population. Two, we know whether they're heart failure. We know whether they're cancer survivors, so we can classify them in that level. We know if they're male or female. We know their general location. So as we look at this information, we can provide very specific patient population information to the FDA. So for us, it's a very positive way now for us to move forward on a very inexpensive way for new indications.
Sure. And since you mentioned those three, or actually four in the presentation the other week, any idea as to when you will be formally lodging applications and or news from those?
Well, let's take a look at that, because the way we have it laid out, I think I just want to make clear on that, and that would be slide 10, is we have lodged malnutrition, bone density, dehydration to the FDA. Renal failure, we've done the R&D work on it, and we have not launched any clinical trials. As we've told the market, we're not going to be launching any major initiative that we need to spend money on. I mean, renal failure obviously is a big opportunity, but, you know, it can wait. And right now our focus is on lymphedema and heart failure. Malnutrition, bone density, and dehydration are going through various stages with the FDA, and we continue to have discussions with the FDA on those various applications, and we're answering the questions that they have. So we would expect sometime the end of this year or early next year that we would have those indications through the FDA in one form or another.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up question from Shane Storey with Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, not often I come back for a follow-up, but here we are. Rick, back on the AHRQ review, is that the one that was prepared by, I think it was McMaster University, as part of the MedCAC review on bioimpedance back in 2009 in Baltimore? Was that one?
No, actually, they used part of that, but it was actually done, believe it or not, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid outsourced it to a Canadian group who looked at various data points.
Yep, that's the one with the, I think we're both talking about the same study. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
That's all I wanted. Thanks. Cheers.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is from Ian Moore, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Oh, g'day, Rick and Morton. I just with these conversations with private payers, I mean, is that moving in a direction where they're only going to provide policies based on some definition of high-risk patients, or is it going to be, where's that on average heading as to who they will be paying for?
And the discussions that we have had have not focused on trying to risk stratify patients. What we've done is we've actually provided them what the risk profile is. So
whether you have lymph nodes removed or you have taxanes or you have radiation, which covers a large, large portion of the at-risk patient population, you're at risk of developing lymphedema. What we focus on is twofold. One, patient outcomes, showing from our patient data from the PREVENT trial a 95% reduction in lymphedema, and the cost of treating advanced cases or complicated cases of lymphedema, which an independent study has shown to be up to $70,000 a year, which is about $60,000 more than the average breast cancer survivor. So we've not gotten into specific discussions about risk stratification, because what we don't want them to do is focus on that. So right now I can tell you that we haven't avoided any questions. We have just, the way we presented it, our perspective and that of the principal investigators of the trial say that everybody who has undergone breast cancer treatment or those that have undergone prostate treatment that impact the lymphatics should be tested. Now, impacting lymphatics could be from a surgical removal, could be from using taxanes, or could be radiation, or a combination of those three. So we're trying to leave it as vague as possible so that we don't get into a point of what is risk stratification and who should get the testing and who shouldn't get the testing. We've not crossed that bridge, and I don't know if we'll ever have to cross that bridge. I just don't know, but we have, based on the advisory board that we have, former private payer medical directors and Medicare private payer, or excuse me, and Medicare medical directors, We have worked very hard not to make that an issue.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Good, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Scott Power with Morgans. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Rick and Morton. One quick question, just on that technical assessment that's been accepted for review. Roughly how long do you think it might take, and does it need to be finished before the NCCN will make a decision?
Oh my gosh, great question. So first of all, let me tell you this. The NCCN relies on their own technical assessment.
Okay, thank you.
So they're not going to be looking at an AHRQ because, and also what we have brought up with private payers is the fact that that was done in 2010 based on 2009 prior data, and then we quickly show that we've done more than 144 studies since that evaluation took place. So, I don't know how long it'll take, Scott, but the good news is that we filed for it. We can tell insurance companies that we filed for it, but more importantly, what we tell them is all the data we've collected since that. So, and also, you recall that the AHRQ said there was no randomized trial, and so that's what's typically repeated by insurance companies. So now we can lay out all of these trials that have been done and one that is level one evidence study. So again, it's really a very strong talking point with insurance companies, and again, the NCCN doesn't look at technical assessments by anybody other than their own medical group.
Great. Thanks very much, Rick.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Sally Watson with Oblique Logic. Please go ahead.
Hello, Sally?
Sally, you're live.
Hi, how are you going? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I certainly hear you now.
Good. Just a quick follow-up on the question I had last time I think we spoke was whether you'd had any contact with GPOs and if that had progressed at all in terms of driving sales channels for you.
No, we really, as I said last time, GPOs were not a focus that we're currently going after. One, we don't feel like we have to negotiate a national contract. We're in a number of hospitals who belong to GPOs. I really believe that our focus is twofold, one on the private payers and then on those integrated health networks, because each of those provide us an opportunity. Now, that doesn't mean we won't get into a GPO, but as we've looked into the GPOs and the discounts we would have to offer to get into these GPOs before we can even approach somebody is something we don't want to cross unless we have to. And the other thing is, The hospitals that belong to these GPOs, the number that we have, I don't know off the top of my head, but I can tell you this, none of them have asked us for a GPO contract before they would proceed, and it has not prevented us from getting into it. It's not like we're a pacing device or an implantable or a drug or something that would have mass adoption at this point. I would say that once we get to a large market penetration with something we would have to deal with. But I think right now, IDNs would provide us a big opportunity because they have a capitated fee, as you know, and they're looking for ways to improve patient outcomes and reduce costs so they can increase their profitability, and then also the private insurers.
Okay, understood. Thanks for that.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Tony Skinner with Selector. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Rick and Morten. Just a question on the, as the business shifts to a commercialization model, can you just talk a little bit about what changes are occurring internally to achieve your, you know, the guidance that you've put down for devices? I mean, you've spoken just quickly then about at the low end, you would like to see 200 devices to meet that. So I'd just be interested in knowing what the sales composition is like, sales team is, and how you're approaching that.
Yeah, so the sales team has, we still have about 12 people in the field, as we've told the market, and until we start to see adoption from private payers, that we would try to limit that. And then when we start to expand, we would do it in such a way before private payers that if we started to see momentum, that we would pull some other parts of the business expenses and so forth to really drive that until we started to see private pay adoption and then traction, because we believe most of that could be self-funding at that point. So really two phases. One, at this phase, before we see any private payers start to come on board, we'll use what we currently have. We are adding to that. We are adding to the sales channel, and we are reducing expenses in other areas in order to pay for that. And then we've already made a conscious decision once we start to see traction with private payers and that results in increased revenue that we'll start to beef up that organization as well. So we're taking it really in two different phases at this point, Tony.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Carrion for closing remarks.
Hey, everybody. Well, listen, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate the time, and we look forward to reporting the next quarter. We're excited about the year. So, again, thank you very much, and have a good day.